Robert Scheinfeld here, and welcome to segment 3 of Chats with Fascinating People. If you do not have access to the other segments, please visit robertscheinfeld.com and click on the Resources tab, and you'll find the other segments of the series, as well as a text document that has contact information for reaching everybody that was interviewed. That's robertscheinfeld, F like Frank, ELD like David, .com, and the Resources tab. You can also check out BustingLooseFromTheBusinessGame.com, which is the book that this interview series was created as part of the launch for, to check out ways to play what I call the new business game. Okay, let's go into the third segment. Robert Scheinfeld here with another episode of Chats with Fascinating People. And today I've got a very close friend of mine who is definitely qualifies as a fascinating people, whose name is John Assaraf. If you happen to be hearing this recording as a result of getting a copy of Busting Loose from the Business Game, the book, then you will no doubt recognize John's name in among other ways as having written the foreword to the book, which I'm on record in many ways, but it'll be on record right now as saying how much I appreciate John doing that for me. In these chats, my intent is to highlight the various things that the people that I'm chatting with have in motion in their careers and lives, and it's kind of an opportunity for them to chat about whatever is most important to them and that they'd like the audience to know about. And John has so many irons in the fire and so many balls in the air that we're going to talk about a lot of things, not spend a huge amount of time on any one topic, but rotate around through the different things going on in his sphere of influence. And then at various points, we'll give out websites, and there'll also be a document that you'll get along with these interviews that will give contact information for any of the things that John may mention that you want to get more detail on. So welcome to the call, John. It's a pleasure to be doing this with you, as always.
Hey, Bob. It's great to be on, and hi to everybody who's listening. It's great to have you join us.
So I guess one of the things I'd like to start with is your most recent book, which was called, which is called The Answer. So why don't you tell everybody a little bit about why you wrote that book and what's in it that might be of particular interest to them, and we'll see where we go from there.
Sure. Well, as you know, Bob, and maybe people don't know, I've been fascinated with quantum physics and neuroscience and really understanding, you know, why we do the things we do and maybe why we don't do the things we know we should do even more. And is there a correlation between, you know, thoughts that I have and this field of intelligence that responds to our thoughts and our emotions? And I've been fascinated with the world of business and, you know, how do you develop and create a successful business that can generate, you know, revenues for you and your family, possibly partners. And so The Answer was really all about combining the best information that I've come across for making sure that your mindset is right and is aligned with how the universe operates and aligned with the latest in brain research technology so that we're thinking the right ways, perceiving the right things, and then acting the right ways. And then what are some of the fundamental business practices that when somebody applies, they could achieve a higher degree of success in their business by attracting more clients and generating more revenue. And that was really the whole idea behind The Answer, and fortunately hit New York Times bestseller fairly quickly, and it's been doing very well around the world now. It's, I guess, 30 countries now in the first year, so we're pretty pleased with that.
Does it make any difference if somebody is a business owner or an employee in terms of being able to take advantage of the book?
Yeah, for somebody who's a business owner, it will really help them grow their business faster. For somebody who's an employee that's ever had the dream or the aspiration of owning their own business, this would work out great for them. If they happen to not want to have their own business, the front half of the book, I think, will fascinate them on how powerful they really are and how they can really achieve whatever it is that they want to achieve in their life if they've got the right thinking, the right behaviors, and obviously the right strategies and tactics.
So it's going to benefit anybody in any kind of a business. Doesn't matter what niche, and it doesn't really matter if they're an employee or an owner.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think, you know, anybody who is serious about achieving better results can and will benefit from this for sure.
And it doesn't matter the size of the business either?
This is really focused on businesses under $2 or $3 million in revenue. And if somebody's already into the, you know, $2 million, $5 million, $10 million, some of the stuff that we're teaching, most likely they already have somebody on their team that's doing it.
Okay. Now, you also have a company that takes some of the things that are in the answer and then lots of things that there wasn't room for and has more of a hands-on approach to helping people to start and build businesses, and that's called One Coach. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. When I retired after my last business venture, I wrote a book, Having It All, that hit the New York Times bestseller as well, and then I started to teach seminars, and in those seminars, there were a lot of people that either had a business that wasn't growing fast enough, they were either stuck or in trouble, that asked me for help, or there are people that really wanted to start their own business, but they didn't have the confidence or the certainty to really go out on their own. And when they did, you know, the failure rate is over 80% of businesses will go out of business within 5 years. And so I said, you know, for some reason I was gifted with the ability to understand business and make it simple for myself to understand, for others to understand. And so, you know, we started a company, one of my dear friends and I started a company called One Coach to help small business owners get from, you know, their first day in business to 100,000, from 100,000 to 250, from 250 to 500, 500 to a million in there, and then some. And we started this company called One Coach, and we've helped over 5,000 businesses just in the last 4 years really understand what it takes, you know, mentally and what it takes from a business perspective to grow. And that's been just one of the most amazing events in my life, and really helping people really get it, which I find most people don't get it. They think that they understand business, but business is not simple. It's complex for the average person. You know, if you take a look at, you know, just, you know, sales or marketing, there's hundreds of moving pieces, and you've got to figure out which of the moving pieces are right for your business. And then what should you do with those moving pieces? How do you orchestrate an effective marketing plan, an effective sales process? And most people have never been taught that. So we teach people how to do that, and it's been a wonderful, wonderful journey so far.
And how do you do it? Is it live events? Is it study at home? Is it online delivered stuff? All of the above, different options based on which program you're involved with? How does it work?
Yeah, first and foremost, One Coach is a business coaching company. And we help people get from where they are to where they want to be by coaching them from one level to the next to the next. So depending on whether you've just started up or you're stuck or you're in trouble, you're growing slowly, you want to grow faster, we'll work with you to customize a package for you based on A, your financial ability, B, how fast do you want to grow, and C, do you want to do most of the work yourself, or do you want to have help with somebody to guide you? And so if you're the type of person that procrastinates, if you're the type of person that, you know, sets goals but hasn't achieved them and you need somebody to keep you accountable, you know, we're going to recommend that you work with, you know, one of our certified business coaches or franchises. You know, if you're somebody that says, you know what, just tell me what to do, point me in the right direction and get out of my way, then we'll recommend a different type of a coaching plan for you. And we do have DVDs, we have CDs, we have books, we have manuals, we have live events, we have, you know, one-to-one coaching, we have one-to-many coaching. So what we've done is we've taken a look at the world of opportunities and how people really want to learn and grow, and then we just make that available for them and customize it for them based on their needs and wants and what their abilities are.
Well, answer this for me. There's, like you said, there's, in the world of business, there's these different segments, sales, marketing, leadership, finance, management, and then there's all these different options within each of those categories. So if someone says, okay, I understand, I don't wear all the hats well, I don't really get it, to use your term, or get it in each of those areas, and I really want some help, there's 20 zillion people out there screaming out, I can help you, I can help you, I can help you. So what would you say is the biggest key difference between the kind of support that you offer through One Coach and the kind of support that's available through all of the other people screaming, I can coach you to a successful business?
That's a great question. I think, number one, we customize everything we do based on where people are. That's number one. Number two, I've built companies myself to the tune of millions of dollars a month in revenue, $10 million to be exact, a month in revenue. And my business partner, who started the company with me, has built numerous companies as well. And so we know where to go for answers, and we also know the answers to give people who've got questions. And part of what we do on a weekly basis, we have what we call Ask the Experts sessions, numerous every single week, where individuals can ask us questions based on, you know, what they need to have answered. So whether it's a finance question or a management question or a sales or marketing or manufacturing question, chances are we either have been there and done that or we know somebody who has. The other thing that we've done is we've created a marketplace for all the business owners to congregate in what we call the business growth marketplace. And each one of them helps each other as well. So it's not limited to just working with one individual. It's availability to work with lots of other people who are experts in the different fields as well that you may have a need to grow in. And so what we've taken a look at is, you know, if you're a business owner, what are the things that you could come up with that you need to have answers for? And we've made those answers available. We've had about 225 interviews with experts, similar to what you're doing with me and with other individuals, specifically in business just in the last couple of years. Every week I interview another expert on something to do with business growth. We've got thousands and thousands of questions that business owners have already asked us that we have actually created the audio files on and the answers to those questions that you could just type in a search engine box, you know, any question you want. And everywhere that we've talked about it for the last couple of years, the audio file for that pops up so you could listen exactly where the question is and exactly where the answer is. And so what we've done is given you fast access to relevant information that you need when you need it. So if you're awake and you're on a trip in, say, Norway, and you have a question that's keeping you up at night, you type it into the question box in our proprietary location on One Marketplace, and there you go. You get the answers you need right there.
And the other thing, too, that from my perspective you do differently that I'd like you to spend some time on, and there are other people that could say, well, yeah, I do the same thing, too, but in my way of looking at things, not to the same kind of depth or robustness that you do, is that, and this is my language, you might describe it in a slightly different way, but there's really two different things that go on with anything that's going on in life. There's the stuff that appears to be happening outside of you, which in business might be sales strategies, marketing strategies, dealing with competition, dealing with motivating employees, retaining employees, helping them operate at the peak productivity and stuff. So the stuff that appears to be going on outside of you. And then there's the stuff that's going on inside of you, which can relate to those outside things in a direct way and can also in an indirect way. So talk a little bit about how you focus on both what's going on inside of you and on what's going on outside of you. And when you're talking about the going on inside of you, this is a place where I think you really shine in terms of what you're different about. So I'd love to hear a bunch about that part.
That, my friend, is called a layup, just so you know, because Bob has just given me the ball right underneath the basket. So just dunk this. I've just been doing a lot of research, Bob, as you know, on thoughts and on you know, behaviors, and on does the intelligent universe that we live in respond, you know, to our predominant thoughts, or, you know, do we respond to the universe's intelligence, or how can we respond better? How can we accept the divine inspiration that infiltrates, you know, each one of us, every one of ourselves? And so this is where, you know, I've gone back, you know, as far as 1633 and Galileo, and gone right through actually even 100 years earlier, if you want to go to Copernicus and some of the early researchers and early scientific studies that have brought us through, you know, 450 or so years of the evolution of our understanding from Galileo to Descartes, to Newton, to Albert Einstein, to Heisenberg, to Max Planck. And I'm talking about physicists, quantum physicists, that have given us some answers that I've been fascinated with, and then combine that with some of the latest in neuroscience that really is telling us that our brain is consistently expanding the neural networks in the brain. And these neural networks changes our perceptions and our behaviors but more importantly, we're starting to understand where our beliefs come from. And our beliefs are what drive most of our behaviors and our perceptions. And beliefs are like the software of the brain. And we've got different parts of the brain that become conditioned or programmed. And once they are conditioned or programmed, the entire physiology, neurobiology, molecular biology, the entire body and species conforms to those beliefs. And so if you have a certain belief about what you can achieve, all of your perceptions and most of your behaviors are going to line up with those beliefs. And so there are people that are listening to this call that believe they can earn $1 million a year. And there's other people on this call that believe they can only earn $100,000 a year. And there's other people on this call who will listen and say, well, I can earn $10 million a year. Well, what's the difference? Well, the difference is either a genetic predisposition or propensity, or it's because they've been conditioned to believe certain things are possible for them and within our society. And what I've done is really integrate, you know, the understanding of how, a little bit about how the universe works with the understanding of how to retrain our brains for higher levels of thinking, higher levels of perception, and for absolute different levels of behavior. And that's really one of the things that we do at One Coach, and we do it better than anybody else in the world, that I do know, in this business, in this space. We work with the individual and their business. And I haven't found, you know, anybody that's able to separate those and be successful. You know, we are who we are, and we are in our business, and our business is in us. And I know that, you know, you study a lot of the same stuff as well, so thanks for the compliment, number one. And I know you know that this is true.
In the work that you've done over the years, would you say that there are some patterns that you've noticed in terms of, going back to beliefs, some of the most common limiting and restricting beliefs that you notice in people who are either struggling with businesses or, you know, are plateauing, they're doing okay, but they're not growing, you know, or they're struggling, and patterns of beliefs in businesses where they just continually, you know, serial entrepreneurs, as they call them, or people that just Midas touch pretty much any kind of a business thing they touch does really well, or the turnaround artist kind of people. Have you noticed any patterns in terms of both the limiting and restricting and then what I'll call the expansive beliefs that you've noticed?
Yeah, I can share with you right now, give you an example. Just prior to this interview, I was with a group of individuals that are in one of my programs called Having It All, and we were talking about limiting beliefs today. And I can share with you that you can basically pinpoint how much somebody is going to earn based on their beliefs. And if you get into any dialogues about, you know, what they believe is possible for them, what their insecurities are, what their hang-ups are, if they've got a healthy self-esteem with specialized knowledge that they own, they really feel that they just own that, they tend to do a hell of a lot better than somebody who feels a lack of confidence or certainty and a knowingness that they can achieve, you know, whatever it is that they choose. And I say that in a loving way because there's some really wonderful people in the program that are, some of them are super, super intelligent from a scholastic perspective, but from a healthy self-respect perspective, their persona is one of lack and limitation. And when you study, you know, the universal laws, when you study a little bit about human potentiality, there is no lack and there is no limitation except the ones that we impose on ourselves. And so when we can help people take off those, you know, old or take out those old software programs of I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm white, I'm black, I'm Asian, I'm Oriental, I'm too heavy, I'm too skinny, whatever the beliefs are that's preventing us from really achieving our goals, and we can get people to take off those self-limiting and self-inflicted, in many cases, beliefs, and we can really help them break free and really achieve their greatness. And all high achievers, you know, some of them suffer from some low self-esteem in one area of their life, but that fuels another area of their life. And so it's not, you know, if you don't feel like you're smart enough, you know, that doesn't fuel you. For some people, that fuels them like crazy to prove, you know, that they can achieve whatever it is that they want.
Is it your experience on both sides, both the limiting and restricting beliefs, the most powerful ones that are limiting and restricting ones are the most powerful ones that are driving someone in a positive way, just to call it that, that in general people are consciously aware of these things? Or do you think that the most powerful ones that are impacting them the most are typically hidden from view?
Well, without question, some of the latest research is showing that 96 to 98% of our thought patterns, perceptions, and behaviors are subconscious. The other statistics that I actually just read in the last week is we are getting subconscious messages up to 7 seconds before we are consciously aware of it. That means that there's so much going on beneath the surface of our conscious awareness that if we don't understand how our subconscious works, and we're just scratching the surface, we found out more about the human brain in the last 7-8 years than we've known in the history of our species, 90% of which was inaccurate or wrong. And so what we need to understand is we're dealing in a brand new arena. You know, space is the last frontier. That's number one. And we're starting to really understand how, well, I shouldn't say really starting to understand, we're getting a glimpse of how the subconscious mind really works and how to retrain that part of our brain so that we eliminate more of the limiting beliefs and we increase the number of positive, you know, potentiality and outcomes for our lives.
So as part of your methodology then, and part again of what makes you different, that you have the ability to help people in a customized way unique to them to isolate which are the beliefs that are limiting them and holding them back the most, and then to help them, I'll just call it to install more empowering beliefs, as you'd probably call it, or some such term. Yeah. Are you able to do that, to help them really isolate which ones are uniquely limiting and restricting them and then helping them to change those?
Absolutely. That's one of the core competencies that we have, is really helping people understand, you know, what beliefs are, where are their beliefs, taking a look at their results, which will show you what their behaviors are for the most part. If you look at somebody's results, you can pretty much know what they've been thinking and doing in the past. And if it's true that 96 to 98% of what we think about and do is because of our subconscious mind, then is it possible to stop the limiting beliefs that are holding us back or confining us to a certain behavioral pattern or thinking pattern? And is it possible to install, as you suggest, a new belief and new habits over time? And the answer is yes. And if you think about how do we learn anything, you know, from the time we're children, there's something in the brain called mirror neurons. And these neurons are actually mirroring, okay, what they see. And that's why, you know, we look to our parents for guidance. We look to our teachers for guidance, and not only guidance in what they say, but we're also paying so much attention to how they behave that we start to mirror and mimic this through these mirror neurons in the brain. So using the latest brain research, I've come up with a process called the neural reconditioning process, which, number one, atrophies the limiting beliefs that people have by stopping the neurons from firing that signal, which is just a little bit more sophisticated understanding of thoughts, okay? And at the same time, let's install some new beliefs and new behaviors based on how the brain learns and based on how the brain becomes programmed. And, you know, one of the things that we know is, you know, there's two parts of the brain. One's called the explicit memory system. The other one's called the implicit memory system. And the explicit memory system is the memory part of our brain that's non-procedural. It's the part of the brain that could read a book, go to a play, and say, yeah, I saw that, I know that. But it hasn't been installed deep enough into the brain for it to become procedural. Like, for example, no matter where you wake up in the world, Bob, you know exactly how to brush your teeth because it's procedural. It's already a part of your psyche because you've done it so many times. Or if I gave you a stick shift car to drive, you'd be able to do that automatically if you've done it before. And if you're used to putting on makeup, you could put on makeup while you're driving your stick shift car and steering with your knee, because it becomes procedural after enough repetition. And so there are ways to access the subconscious mind, you know, from different modalities of auditory modalities, visual modalities, feeling or kinesthetic modalities, using technology, auditory technology, visual technology today, to be able to access the subconscious mind and either program it or reprogram it. And a perfect example is imagine children. You know, they're in front of the TV in a lot of cases quite a bit. Well, they're being programmed by these TV shows, and the TV shows know it, and the advertisers know it. That's why they spend so much money advertising on these shows, because they know that when somebody's in a bit of a trance, which most kids are and adults are when they're watching TV, they can impregnate messages. And in those messages that they're impregnating, they're creating a neurological pattern in the brain and an association in the brain with that product. Well, guess what? Why not use the same material, the same methodologies to program our own brains to think and perceive and behave the way we want, as opposed to allowing, you know, other people to program us to get us to buy their products or services that they want.
And I imagine that with the explosion of knowledge here, that this is something that's very difficult to keep up with, and again, something where you shine. Because one of the things that's just such a big deal to me is that in my own work, I just have this thing about anytime someone is touching my sphere of influence, I have this desire, because it's true, to have it just scream, there's something different about this guy. You know, there's something different about what he's doing. And so many people are out there and have been out there for years talking about, you've got limiting beliefs and there's stuff going on in your subconscious mind and you need to change your beliefs and you need to this and you need to that. And there's 20 million different formulas for how to do that. But to keep up with the latest and the greatest and the cutting edge of it is something that is a gift, and is something that's in your sphere of influence, partially because you're just so fascinated by it yourself. But it's a hard thing to keep up with. How do you do that?
Well, I'm just fascinated with it. It's no different than somebody who's a movie buff or somebody who's a health nut or somebody who loves technology. You know, I just love it. And so, you know, I subscribe to different reports. I read different books. You know, I've just started reading a book on mind programming, you know, the last couple of days, that's got some of the latest research and put in layman's terms. You know, I've got in front of me, another little manual called Do-It-Yourself Brain Surgery, which is 101 revolutionary brain research-based secrets, strategies, and skills that you can implement right now. That one of my friends who's read about 70,000 pages of research and notes put together, who's also fascinated with this. And so I'm fascinated with, I guess, this incredible tool that you know, I call God. God gave us, that we are just starting to learn about. And, you know, in learning about the brain, we're starting to find, you know, how spectacular it really is. And nobody's ever given us the user's manual for it. And I'm fascinated by how things work and, you know, how do we increase the amount of joy and the level of play and journey that we're experiencing here on the planet. And the brain is what controls, you know, your life. It's what controls your perceptions. It's your brain that really is the power center of everything. And so the more I could find out about how to get it to work better and how to enjoy my life more and achieve more, the more I can share with others. And I just, you know, for me, I play at this. And one of my favorite lines that I learned many years ago is, you know, hire or barter or partner with people who play at things you have to work at.
Yeah, I've always loved that. I never heard it before you, but it's a great line.
Yeah.
Well, one other thing that I want to talk about, and it ties together in a slightly different way, everything that we've mentioned in terms of business and the inner focus on yourself and the outer focus on strategies and techniques and stuff and everything else. And it's one of my big pet peeves, as you know, is that when you use the term having it all, you're not just talking about business success and money and stuff and houses and cars and fancy whatever, but you're talking about lifestyle and you're talking about fun and you're talking about pleasure and a lot of other things. So talk a little bit about how you define having it all, how you go about keeping your focus in all that it includes in your own day-to-day life, running multiple businesses and historically. And then I'd like to get into the having it all program that you have, but start out with defining what having it all really means to you and how you keep that as such a priority with being just as busy or busier than most of the people that are talking that would say, well, I'd love to, but.
Well, I learned many, many years ago. I was really fortunate, Bob, that I learned many years ago, going back to 1980 specifically, to ask myself a couple of questions. And here were some of those questions I'll share with everybody. Number one, you know, what do I want to trade my life for? And I was taught to not ask whether I was worthy of the goals I was trying to achieve. I was taught to ask, are the goals worthy of my life? And so first and foremost, I've chosen goals that are worthy of my life. And that's number one. Number two, I also was taught to live a values-based life. And that was to ask myself, what do I value most in my life? And I said, well, I value God. I value my family. And I value my health. Those are the three priorities for me. And so, you know, the first thing that I do every day is I meditate and connect to God, and I pray. And I spend lots of time with my family and my children and my wife, and I take care of my health, both physically, mentally, and spiritually. So I focus on what I call the big rocks first, and then fit everything else into the rest of the time. And some people say, well, how can you do that? I said, well, I decided the lifestyle that I wanted to live first, and then what kind of work or plays, in my case, in your case, would I have to do to make enough money to live that lifestyle the way I want to? And I heard a brilliant saying from you many years ago, and that was that it had to be lifestyle friendly. And it has to be lifestyle friendly. And so I learned to design my life that way and to plan my life that way. And so I was 20 years old when this happened, so I really didn't learn it a different way. My parents certainly didn't know this. My father was a cab driver. Mother worked at a local department store, and they were victims of circumstance. And I was taught, well, you can create your own circumstance. So I was conditioned, fortunately, thank God, the right way in my early 20s to think in a different way than most people do. And so, you know, one of the things that I teach is to help people understand they can design the life of their dreams, and then they could put the beliefs and the habits and the strategies and tactics and environments in place to live that life. And what I'm not saying, nor do I ever want to appear to come across, is that there's this magic pill that is going to solve everything for everybody and instantaneously overnight this happens. It doesn't. It's no different than planting, you know, any other type of garden. You've got to plant, you've got to till the soil, you've got to take care of it, and then you harvest. And there's a season to sow and there's a season to reap, and you cannot ever do both in the same season.
Yeah, and you know what, it comes back to another belief that in this case is a limiting and restricting one, which is not believing that it's really possible, or saying, I've got to achieve these goals, and so I'm going to sacrifice some lifestyle stuff, I'm going to sacrifice some lifestyle friendliness for a while until I achieve these goals, and then I'll bring that back into the priority kind of thing, and just not thinking it's possible. And there's an interesting story that I really have never talked about very much, but it's been something that's been primary on my mind forever, because I talk a lot about the influence that my grandfather had on me. And my grandfather, as most of the people listening to this probably know but may not, was the founder and the original chairman of the Board of Manpower, the world's largest temporary help service. Now, when he died, Manpower was at about $1 billion a year. And he was the head of that company. And he lived in Chicago, and Manpower was based in Milwaukee. He wasn't even there. He had a completely free lifestyle, and part of it was for the same reasons that you talked about, which is he carved it that way because it was important to him. And another part of it, which is such a critical skill that for some reason my grandfather had and my father had, but I don't, is delegating. They were both so good at finding the right people for the job. Mm-hmm. And empowering them to be able to do the job unsupervised and then be available when they needed help, but basically hiring the right people, empowering them to do their job, and then leaving them the hell alone. But a lot of people that would say, well, I just can't because of da-da-da-da. Well, here was a guy running a $1 billion company, which last year did $18.5 billion, but in his day it was doing $1 billion before he died, wasn't even there day-to-day, was in a completely different city, and from time to time would take the train in and and would be in meetings and stuff, but wasn't on conference calls all day, wasn't jammed up all day on the phone with people in the home office, and had the kind of freedom and the kind of lifestyle that even some of the world's most successful people would have drooled. But he did what you talked about, which is, number one, he believed it was possible. Number two, he made it a priority, and he carved out what he needed to carve out in order to make it happen, even with a company that big.
And, you know, he understood this. He is what I call, I know you know this, unconsciously competent. And maybe he became consciously competent from that. But he applied the natural laws of the universe. He was obviously wired for a very, very successful, you know, a business and lifestyle. And I know he passed a lot of that on to his grandson.
Now, when you see, because sometimes it's like pulling teeth, because so many people give it lip service and they say, yeah, about the lifestyle piece. But from your experience, when you put it onto someone's radar and you continue to work with them over time to till their garden and such, like you said, you do see people moving it onto the front burner and redesigning their lives such that things do become lifestyle friendly. You don't see this as being like some kind of entrepreneurial disease that's incurable.
Oh, absolutely not. No, I see, you know, it's only incurable if somebody's not prepared to get out of their own way and look at their stuff. If people aren't prepared to look at, you know, what's working in their life, what's not working in life, where they're a part of it, where they're not a part of it, you know, then they could, there's hope. You know, I had to overcome severe challenges with thinking I was not smart enough, not good enough when I was a kid. And I was fortunate that I got a hold of this information, you know, 28 years ago. And, you know, but, you know, the beautiful thing about the brain is it's malleable, malleable, ability to regenerate cells and to create new neural networks. You know, neuroplasticity is showing us that, you know, we're not hardwired as we once thought we were.
And there's no such thing, truthfully, even though lots of people could use this as, well, sorry, but that's just the way I am.
It's not, it used to be, you know, it used to be a really great, valid, you know, argument, but now we know that's not true. You know, it's just an escape route that people use to say, I'm not prepared to change. And guess what? If you're not prepared to change, then you've got to be prepared to live with what you've got. And if you're prepared to live with what you've got, then I think it's time to be quiet and not, you know, not really complain much. But if you want to make some changes, then guess what? You can make some changes and do what you are destined to do. And now is a good time to do that.
Cool. So we've got a few minutes left. Why don't we finish up with talking about your Having It All program?
Sure. Every 6 months or so, I invite about 100 people into a program called Having It All, where we really focus on making sure they're absolutely 100% clear on their goals. What is it that they want to achieve? And not what they think they can achieve, but what do they want to achieve in the areas of health, wealth, relationships, career, business, spirituality. And then we, you know, I teach them over a period of 6 months everything I've learned about achieving the areas of success that they want to achieve in. And I bring in other experts. We've got an online community that they are a part of, that they help each other. We do webinars. We do a live event. We do teleseminars. We do question and answer sessions on a weekly basis so that people consistently feel like they've got support. They've got the right information in the right order, and they've got a way for themselves to really move forward in a consistent and in a organized method. And more importantly, they get a way to stop telling themselves the stories of why they can't or why they shouldn't or why they don't deserve to in a very loving environment where people are not judging. They're just helping people move forward.
And would it be accurate to say that while stuff that happens there would overflow in naturally into a business experience, that business isn't the primary focus there like one coach, so it's kind of different or what?
Can you say that one more time? I didn't hear the last part.
there are certain things, you know, because we talked about the inner focus and the outer focus. So there are times that when you change your inner focus, something's just going to change in the outer world. So somebody could come to having it all and have something change in their business life as a result of it. But is the focus in the actual training, is there a specific focus at any time about business, or is it more about the big picture of their life?
Well, we take 1 month, we focus on money. 1 month we focus on relationships. 1 month we focus on career and business. 1 month we focus on health. And then interspersed throughout all the time is the ability to ask any questions that they want on the areas that are most pressing for them at that time. And so whether you're working on your business or you're working on your health, there are fundamentals that when you apply those fundamentals, you can achieve predictable results. And so what we're teaching people is some fundamentals and advanced techniques and information for them to be able to apply based on where they are again and not where, you know, the group is. So we've got some individuals in the groups that are multimillionaires that aren't focusing on their business. They really want to focus on integration of the other areas of their life. We've got other individuals that are flat broke, but they really want to focus on money. So we get everybody to help each other with me acting as their guide and me acting as their, you know, their central leader for giving them the information and helping them get from point A to point B as fast as possible.
So are there people that are, as an example, in your sphere doing one coach and having it all, or is all the having it all stuff available in one coach and you wouldn't do both, or how do you look at that?
Well, I wouldn't recommend that you do both. It's just too much work to do both. And so if somebody really wants to focus on their business, I highly recommend that they focus on one coach. If somebody wants to focus on the other areas of their life while they're building their business, then I highly recommend having it all.
Okay, so if somebody wants to know more about all of this stuff we're talking about, they can find the answer at any online or offline bookstore, right?
Absolutely. Everything that I've done is on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, et cetera, yes.
And where would they find information on one coach and on having it all?
They can find information on one coach at onecoach.com, so it's onecoach.com. And we've always got some free gifts there for people to get a taste of what we're doing. And then if they want to know more about personal development and what I'm up to in the personal development world and really the science and spirituality of success, then they can go to johnassaraf.com, and I'm sure you'll have that written down somewhere.
Yeah, but why don't you spell it just in case someone's listening and don't have the paper and they're going to integrate it here.
johnassaraf.com is johnassaraf.com. johnassaraf.com.
Perfect. So if there's one kind of like nugget that you'd like to leave people with, if there is such a thing, why don't you share that, and then we'll close for this particular interview.
Number one is what's coming to my mind is, don't let your present circumstances control your thinking. Choose what you want to achieve in your life and then become the person who thinks, perceives, and behaves in ways to achieve that.
Awesome. Well, thanks for your time, John. It was
my pleasure, my friend.
I loved it.
Loved it as well. Always a joy being with you.
Robert Scheinfeld here with another episode of Chats with Fascinating People. And once again, I have chosen, to me anyway, and I'm sure to you, another fascinating person to have a chat with who's had a very interesting experience and journey in life. His name is Telman Knudsen. And Telman and I first met at the time of this recording, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. Both of us were very involved with internet marketing for a long time and crossed paths as we were both learning and then speaking and teaching and doing other things in that arena. And also discovered that we both have a passion for both business and personal development, personal growth, spirituality, whatever you want to call it, as a mixture in terms of what we're focused on and as an influence in how we conduct business. And so welcome to the call, Telman.
Hey, thank you. I this sounds like it's going to be a very, very cool interview and a great chat.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and I guess in certain circles, internet marketing related, you are someone who's extremely well known, And in other circles, you are under the radar. And although you've been doing fascinating things and had a lot of success, like me, actually, in the personal development arena, there's a lot of people that have never heard of you, don't know anything about your background or your various skills or passions or areas of expertise. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey, significant kind of experiences and aspects of your own journey that have gotten you to the point that you are now, and then we'll talk a little bit about where you are right now and what's going on with you in your world. But let's let the folks get to know you a little bit better and hear a little bit about your history and your journey to this point.
Sure, that would be awesome. I was kind of thinking about this, and here's what I'll do. During this call, I guess I'd like to explain something, a part of my history, part of my past that I've never talked about publicly before, and have been kind of preparing to discuss some of these concepts and principles on a public level. But they involve some very personal things, and given the nature of the talk that we're having and the nature of busting loose from the business game and the concepts and principles that you utilize and teach in your work, I think it might be very, very interesting. So I'll try not to go on too long, because I know we don't have a huge amount of time here, but basically here's where I came from. Prior to having a successful business, right now I have a $5 million a year business and growing. I had 7 failed businesses in a row. I had 7 majorly failed business attempts. But before even going into business, I had been in high school. I managed somehow to graduate from high school. I was diagnosed with attention deficit when I was a kid, and I had severely deformed legs and all this different stuff, and went to a public school in rural New Hampshire, and I was the kind of kid that either got A's or got D's in my classes. If I was interested, it was an A with no effort. If I wasn't interested, I couldn't do anything in order to do well in an area. And for a variety of reasons, at the end of high school, I had applied to several colleges, but wasn't getting along so well with my folks, and essentially, was informed kind of last minute that I wasn't going to have college covered for me after all, which was kind of a shocker. And so I said to myself, I grew up in rural New Hampshire, I have bad grades. I'm washing dishes for a job. What am I going to do here in order to move forward with my life? If I stay in the area, I'll probably end up pumping gas, or at best being a cook in a restaurant that for the rest of my life. So what am I going to do? And I talked to a few friends and ended up at the time I had a 2.5-foot mohawk, and I was I was the one kid with the splatter painted car, in my little town that I grew up in. And so what ended up happening was I joined the Navy, and I went in to take the ASFABs and to see how I would score and all that kind of stuff, which is, if you don't know that, it's the equivalent of the military SAT. It's a kind of a performance test to see where your strengths are as it relates to military schools and trainings. And I ended up taking that and scored in the top 1%, at which point I got swarmed by the guys in the recruitment office, because I didn't look like I was going to score that well. And they wanted me to go into the Navy for all sorts of different reasons. And they wanted me to go in for the nuke program primarily, and I just didn't want to spend that much time around radiation. So I said, hey, thanks for the offer on the nuke school, but I'll pass. If I'm going to go into the Navy, I might as well get a good education. So is the longest or most comprehensive school that you have other than Nuke School? And they said, well, it's actually even longer than Nuke School, and that's Sonar Technician School. And so I went into the Navy to become a sonar technician. And while I was in the Navy, I joined the Navy. I was in boot camp, and I went to boot camp in Great Lakes, Illinois, in Chicago. And I was in boot camp. I remember we were several weeks in, and it was in the middle of summer. It was the summer of 1995, and I was standing at attention for a very long time, along with everyone else I was you know, I was there with, and it seemed like hours, could have been 4 hours plus, on the hot blacktop, and just standing there at attention, and we hadn't really eaten much that day, hadn't had much water that day, and I remember at one point I was standing up and I started kind of looking around, and as I looked around, I noticed something a little bit weird. You know how heat looks in the middle of a hot summer day when it's coming up off pavement and it kind of makes the air dense and waver a little bit?
Yeah.
Well, so there was that. But then in addition to that, everybody, and I've never admitted this publicly before, so this is kind of a wild thing, everybody was glowing. Everyone was glowing. And they had this halo around their entire bodies. And I said, wow, I must really need some water here. And I kind of, and they kept on glowing for a while. And it was kind of like that heat coming off, it was kind of like the heat waves coming off their body, but it was clearly different than that. And I kind of shook my head a few times, blinked a few times, and finally cleared my vision up. And shortly thereafter, we went back into our barracks and had some water. We ate lunch, and everything was fine. Well, a few days later, we had this situation where we were able to write letters. Once a week, we had about an hour and a half to write letters to people. And so I was down, you know, there weren't any tables or chairs or anything like that in the barracks. So you know, everybody kind of lays down on the hard linoleum floor and writes letters. And I'm writing letters. We had recently eaten, plenty hydrated, didn't even really work out that hard that day. And I look around. It wasn't even that hot of a day. I look around, and everybody's glowing again. And I say to myself, whoa, what's going on here? What ended up happening was they didn't stop glowing. Everyone was glowing, and I had no idea what was going on. Now, there has been it was very scary because I have had recurring instances of schizophrenia in my family line, and that was well, very concerning because all of a sudden everybody's glowing. I'm in boot camp, and I think I'm going completely crazy. And of course, while you're in boot camp, you're supposed to get depressed. That's kind of the whole idea, the whole break them down, build them up kind of concept. And needless to say, there wasn't a whole heck of a lot I could do. There wasn't anybody I could talk to about the fact that I was seeing auras around everybody that I was looking at. And throughout the rest of boot camp, everybody just kept on glowing. If I was awake and looking at people, they were glowing. And this is, you know, it was kind of starting to eat at me. It was kind of starting to mess me up a little bit. So there's nobody I could talk to, and everybody said, don't worry, don't worry. As soon as you go to your A school, as soon as you go out to San Diego and get out of boot camp and you can start eating some normal food and wearing civilian clothes and going out every now and again, you'll feel great, you'll feel fine, you won't be depressed anymore, and everything will be wonderful. And for me, that's just not what happened. What happened was I got more. I ended up finishing up boot camp, went to San Diego to go to my sonar technician A school, and ended up getting more depressed and more and I ended up having other very intensely disturbing symptoms. I ended up looking down and starting to see shadows that were being cast start moving around as if they were animated. Shadows of trees, shadows of people moving independently. And then I started hearing voices. And it got really bad where I thought I was completely going crazy. And fast forward about 6 months, I ended up getting out of the Navy quite a bit early because I was really messed up. I ended up snapping on this one guy, and he said something offhand, and I had a very violent reaction, and I didn't quite know what to do. I realized right after that happened that I had to get out of the Navy. I managed to get out of the Navy actually honorably, and so I had been in long enough to become a veteran. So I actually was in the Navy. I was in sonar technician training school, and am a legal veteran with an honorable discharge. What ended up happening was I got out for psychiatric reasons, and after that, I still continually would hear voices and see these auras. And that what happened was I ended up going to college after I got out of the Navy, even though I was all messed up. I ended up going back and washing dishes and cooking in a restaurant for a few months to try to get my head back together, went to college, and once I was in college for a few weeks, all these symptoms just kind of evaporated. They just disappeared, and I never ended up seeking psychiatric help or treatment or anything like that. However, what happened was so intense and so life-altering in terms of noticing how perception worked and the fact that I was seeing, hearing, experiencing all of these things around me that the rest of the world simply could not see, hear, or experience, I made the decision that I was never going to take another class again that I didn't want to take, and that I was going to spend the rest of my life studying perception and what happened to me in that time while I was in the military. And there are many, many people that have undergone much, much higher levels of stress and duress than I went through in the military that never had symptoms remotely like that. And so it really made me ask the question of, well, what's going on here? What was or wasn't I seeing or experiencing? And so in college, I decided to study brain waves, altered states of consciousness, and peak performance in athletes. I've been a distance runner since ninth grade and was, one of the fastest runners in New Hampshire and then this national level team in college. But I was really focused on basically altered states of awareness and how you could shift the brain in and out of different states of awareness and perception in order to achieve different results and notice and experience different things in your life. And so I continued through college and ended up studying hypnosis and the NLP quite in depth after apprenticing with several different shamans around the world, learning the use of altered states of awareness for healing and so on, from old Scandinavian culture to Mongolian shamanic practices to modern New Age stuff that's going on, even onto the scientific side where I really started studying a lot of binaural beats and specific frequency sound wave patterns that are generated through sound frequencies and ultimately brainwave patterns. And so going through all of this stuff academically, what ended up happening was my father he had a triple upper aortal aneurysm at the end of my junior year in college, which very few people survive. And he managed to survive, but for a while we didn't know if he was going to or not. He was put into a chemically induced coma because of the surgery they had to do, and we thought we were going to lose him. And so he and I hadn't talked really at all for a couple of years, and I was immediately in charge of helping to figure out what was going on with his estate and all this kind of stuff, which I had no idea how to deal with. So anyway, what ended up happening was I dropped out of school. I finished up school in my junior year and intended to go back to college. But the reason I was going to college was to find out what I wanted to do with my life. And so I decided to take a hypnotherapy certification course. And in taking the hypnotherapy certification course, basically what happened was I started doing it. I really loved it, and I was really good at it to the point where there were about 12 other students, but my teacher offered me a job halfway through the course because I was really talented at doing hypnosis. And so I took the job, worked for her for a year and a half, and eventually went out and started my own practice, struggled for a while, and then ended up opening up six hypnosis offices and specializing in helping folks with attention deficit disorder to use their mind and their brain in order to actually amplify attention deficit symptoms and use them as strengths. Built that up over the course of several years to the point where I was doing very, very well. I was working about 12 to 14 hours a day, 6 days a week, you know, six separate offices, one day a week each. And when I say I was doing well, what that meant is my bills were just barely getting paid, but they were getting paid, and I had plenty of business coming in. But what I wasn't doing was making a lot of profit. My business was successful, but personally I still wasn't. And I said to myself, well, how can I turn all this around? How can I maybe sell my best hypnosis sessions online? And so I recorded a series of my best techniques and tactics utilizing hypnosis and NLP and started selling them online. And within several months, I replaced my income. I replaced my day-to-day income with an online income, even though I was only working at doing things online a few hours a day. And I essentially had learned the first law of business leverage and finding a way of selling my service in a product format that could be easily and inexpensively reproduced. And from there, I said, wow, this is good, but how can I make it better? I really need to study this internet marketing stuff. And then I started doing interviews with all sorts of people on the topic of email list building. It seemed like a core strategy, and it turned out, in fact, to be, in my opinion, the most important tactical strategy when it comes down to having a successful online business, especially if you haven't done anything like this before. And ended up doing all these interviews, and after about a year of that, I managed to have pulled in almost $800,000 online. I have to understand that I started my internet business with $50. I was over $200,000 in debt, and I had three other adult roommates in the apartment that I was living in and a computer that just barely worked. And managed to go from working my butt off in hypnosis, seeing clients one-on-one and getting by to making almost $1 million in sales my first year online, not having any idea how to even put up a web page when I started. And shortly thereafter, my subscribers started asking me to create a list building course. I did. That was incredibly successful. And since then, I've doubled my company, just about doubled my company every year. So now I'm known as this list building guy, and I teach everybody list building and how to build giant, highly responsive email lists online for their business and work from the comfort of their own home. I have 15 employees that for the most part work from home up and down the East Coast, and am now working on some kind of higher level stuff, which is why I got into all this internet stuff in the first place. I'm preparing right now to run across the United States of America. At the time this is being recorded, I'm going to be running from coast to coast, from New York all the way to LA, and I'm going to be doing it barefoot, trying to raise about $100 million for teenage homelessness, to eradicate teenage homelessness in the United States of America. And in the process of developing a whole new product line around the topic of become superhuman, coming back to kind of my roots in extreme personal development. And so we're creating courses and working with experts in fields like astral projection, telepathy, psychokinesis, telekinesis, basically higher level, virtually sci-fi like superpower development. And we're building an entire company around those principles right now, and it's very exciting. People are very, very interested and constantly asking me about all this kind of stuff. So that's my short version of what I'm working on.
Wow. There's a lot of those aspects of your story, like you said, that that I had never heard before. And so many people out there that have had such amazingly interesting lives and fascinating twists and turns that you just never would have expected would take them where they went. On your journey as a result of all of this and kind of moving into the superhuman thing, do you still have the same kind of passion for marketing as you did?
I found that marketing is really interesting, right? Especially direct response marketing. I mean, for the first 7 failed businesses that I had no interest in business or marketing. I tried reading a few business books and found them boring, and I assumed all business books sucked. And so I was unwilling to study business or marketing in college. I was unwilling to study business or marketing for any of my own businesses. And as a result, I ran very unsuccessful companies and businesses that ultimately just drove me further and further into debt. When I started learning marketing, it was because I had to in order to survive. And direct response marketing was the quickest, easiest, fastest, and most measurable way that I could learn to generate profit and to improve how much profit you're able to generate. And hey, you know, $5 million a year later, it's still working. Now, as I go into these other areas, I found that my passion for marketing really isn't about marketing. It's really about art, I think. I've just found that when you're talking about taking a creative idea or a principle, an inspiration, and molding reality in order to bring that idea into the physical world, that you're kind of in a situation where how are you going to do that, right? Well, there are a handful of mediums that are available to people in order to make that happen. One of them is painting or drawing or sculpture, to take the most abstract, amazing concept and express it or put it into reality through art. Again, that could be music. It could be a film, right? There are a wide variety of expressions of creativity. But I met my wife Jody in sculpture class 12 years ago, and if there was one class that I always got an A in school, it was art. But it wasn't because I was a very skilled artist. It was because I really loved taking an idea and turning it into something real. And with what I found is with internet marketing and direct response internet marketing, it's allowed me to take my ideas, and the internet is one of the most amazing mediums for creation that's out there. Now you can go over into the spiritual side of things, and all of a sudden you're dealing with things on an entirely different level. So from a more pragmatic angle, if you're dealing with immediate tangibles, the internet is interesting because it's riding the line between tangible and intangible. It's there, it exists, but nobody can touch the internet. And what I've found is that when the internet is a medium in which there's, you don't have any of the three-dimensional limitations that you do in most forms of art, right? But then you also don't really have the dimension of time that you're racing against online either. You can, time melts away. It becomes something that, you can create things online that will be around forever or that are time sequences that go out into the future, like with this little intangible, inanimate machine that seems to continually work and function. And when you apply the internet to business and making money, there's a way that you can take your ideas and go, so you're no longer dealing with three dimensions, you're no longer dealing with time, so you're no longer dealing with four dimensions. And I kind of think of the internet as a fifth dimensional medium for turning an idea into reality, and I don't completely understand the fifth dimension that's beyond time, but it has something to do with just this whole concept of kind of a universal neural network, whether it's collective unconscious or any term you wish to use. It's something amazing is happening with it, and you can tap directly into so much power and resources and wisdom and collectively connect with so many people around the world that you're able to create something that simply has never been able to exist before. And so my passion for marketing is still there, but it's not really about marketing. It's about creating something extraordinary out of seemingly nothing, right? And the internet for me has just been an incredibly powerful tool to do that. And entering into some of these other areas of personal interest for me is thrilling. More, you know, it's more thrilling every day as you can push those limits further and further.
Well, and the thing that's so interesting is there tends to be, you know, and there's exceptions to everything, but there tends to be a mindset that says there are certain things that are creative and there are certain things that are not. You know, art, like you talked about, sculpture, painting, music, filmmaking, these kinds of things tend to get the moniker of creativity.
Sure.
And maybe if you're running a business, there are certain people within the business that would be considered creative people, and they might be graphic designers or they might be whatever. But there tends to be something of a judgment of other aspects of business that don't get lopped into creative. Now, from a big picture perspective, at the core of my work and what I believe is that everything in the human experience, everything, personal, professional, everything is a creative expression. But on a much more practical kind of a level, I'm really happy to have had you highlight that point, because a lot of people don't really look at business, whether it's sales, it's marketing, it's whatever, as being a creative kind of a dynamic, and yet it's purely that. And when you're able to really just let that flow, which you've been in for a long time and are continuing to push the envelope on, that's where the tremendous joy and satisfaction and fun and fulfillment comes from, when you're experiencing it that way. Versus a must, or I need to achieve these goals, and I need to this, and I need to that, and you're focused on all of that other stuff instead of your internal experience of expressing yourself creatively and having fun with that particular process.
I agree wholeheartedly. For me, I do tend to set goals. However, one big thing about goal setting that frequently comes up, or at least in my life, is I set goals that are, well, basically I set goals that are completely unattainable, very intentionally. I mean, people could be listening to this years later after the recording. So hey, take a look at what actually happened. But the reality is, I'm trying to run across the United States barefoot and raise $100 million doing it. And the reason that I'm doing those two things is because I don't yet know how I'm going to pull it off. And for me, setting absolutely unreasonable goals, unattainable isn't really the right word, absolutely unreasonable and illogical goals allows me to then get very, very creative under pressure. And I personally operate very, very well under pressure and enjoy being under pressure in a creative situation. It just ignites my brain in a way that I have always. And so I agree. It's a it's a concept that most folks may not apply in their day-to-day lives. And when you try to go after something that's greater than yourself and greater than the people that are around you, creativity really is your only option. And being exposed to new ways of thinking, new ways of doing things, you don't have any other choice. And I just found that thoroughly engaging since I started doing business that way.
Absolutely, and it sends the enjoyment factor soaring, because all of this can be contained within the same space. You know, a musician at whatever level, you know, super successful rock star to someone who's fiddling around at home or playing in local clubs or whatever, you know, they can have in their mind, I want to make a living at this. I'd like to make more money, whatever it is. I have the following kinds of goals. But at the same time, when they're actually engaged in it moment by moment, the focus in that moment is on creatively expressing and allowing pure creativity to flow through to the best of their ability without limits or restrictions, just allowing whatever's flowing through to flow through, and then you can carve it later. But there's so many people that I find, particularly in business, that get so seduced or hypnotized by the goals that even though they could simultaneously hold all of this stuff at once and retain a focus on fun and creativity and enjoyment of the process and goals, they don't. And
right.
So it's really wonderful and refreshing to hear someone who has had an enormous amount of success. And I don't know if you would say the same thing, but I would say that the sizzle for the internet marketing is, you know, you can spend an hour a day and you can make zillions of dollars on the beach with your notebook, you know. And there's so much stuff about lifestyle, and yet there's so many people that are involved in internet marketing that get so sucked into it that they're working 20 hours a day and they can't get off the computer. It's almost like they're addicted to it, even though theoretically they could.
Right.
And
right.
So to see you grow up in that world and have all the same temptations and retain this focus and have that kind of level of awareness of it being a creative process and an enjoyment from it, I really salute you for. I think it's terrific.
Well, I mean, at least for me, you know, the process is, I don't get any joy out of achieving goals at all. I tend to, the moment I can see the finish line, set a new goal. I don't, you know, like receiving the award or necessarily even getting recognition for it. What I really like doing is trying to go after something that nobody's ever done before and seeing what comes out of that process and trying to pull it off. And it you can create so much for value for other people in two ways in going after things like that. The first way is simply in whatever it is that you create, it will be so much higher on such a higher caliber than likely anything else that's out there. If you're trying to accomplish something that's greater than anything else that's out there, chances are good that you will put something together that's either greater or way better than the majority of the products, of the services, or hey, whatever the nature of your business is. If it's business, usually it's a product or a service, one way or the other. You can create something that's much, much greater than the majority of your competitors out there. But the second is that if you make your striving, if you make your greater thoughts toward what you're working for, if you make that public and you're willing to fail publicly or you're willing to succeed publicly, all of a sudden the public seems to rally behind you to help you achieve your goal. People who are operating at a much, much higher level in whatever area it is that you're working, whether it's financially, whether it's musically, whether it's artistically, whether it's athletic folks, you know, whatever walk of life you're working toward here, if you're trying for something extraordinary, extraordinary people rally to your call, and working with extraordinary people has been a just an incredibly, incredibly good way for me to learn and be constantly more and more engaged with each and every passing day. Just the more time I can spend with people that are operating at a higher level than I am in an area where I'm trying to grow and learn, the more fun everything becomes. So I do believe in setting goals that are completely outrageous and being willing to hit them or fail miserably publicly in the process, because that's where the best innovations in the world always come from.
Well, and it's one of those things that's very common in the world of spirituality, New Age, metaphysical, whatever you want to call it, which is, you know, life's a journey and it's about the journey, it's not about the destination. And it's one of those things that sounds really wonderful and very inspiring, and everybody can kind of nod their heads when they hear it, but almost no one is really able to live that way. And yet at the same time, in my language, it's the truth with capital T's. It is all about the journey. And you certainly can enjoy reaching destinations, but the most important part, where the real opportunity for the fun, again, and the creative expression is in the journey, not the outcome of the journey.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly.
Now, we're just about out of time, so is there, if somebody wants to find out more about list building, more about your superhuman stuff, even though they may be hearing this and your run across the country is long gone, but if they want to find out more about that, if they're hearing this now or there's a website that would continue to be up talking about what happened, what are some ways that people can find out more about the things that you've talked about that are your projects right now? Or if there's a generic website that if someone's listening to this 5 years from now, the odds are that website would still be talking about what you're currently up to, even if we didn't talk about it here.
Well, I would rather just give one website, but I don't think that's going to be an effective way of directing people because we're talking about a bunch of different things here. On the internet marketing business end of things, people can just go check out listbuilding.com. That's listbuilding.com, listbuilding.com. And we'll teach you all sorts of cool stuff there about list building. If you're interested in some of the become superhuman stuff, that's a little bit more fringe, but incredibly, incredibly fascinating, you can go to becomesuperhuman.com, becomesuperhuman.com, become superhuman. And, as far as the run is concerned, you can check out runtellmanrun.com, runtellmanrun.com.
Well, any parting words for the folks who have been inspired and fascinated and got the wheels in their mind turning in all kinds of different ways from listening to our conversation here?
You know, the biggest thing that I would suggest to folks is that the easiest way for you to grow personally, professionally, spiritually, physically, mentally is to spend time with people who are better than you are in those areas. If you feel like you're the top dog and you're trying to grow spiritually and you feel like you're more spiritually grown or there's more spiritually developed than anyone around you, it's probably time to spend some quality time with people who have spent an immense more time, effort, and energy learning, honing, perfecting, getting better at that area. Same is true in business. Same is true in same is true with physical pursuits. I mean, in any area. And so, what I've found is, if you want to achieve outrageous results in your life, or you want to accomplish something outrageous, then the more outrageous that your goal is, or the project that you're working toward is, the thing that you're creating is, the more extraordinary that idea is, the more extraordinary and outrageous people will rally behind you to make it happen. But if you set a mediocre goal, mediocre people are going to help you. If you're trying to accomplish something mediocre at best, chances are good you're going to be surrounded by mediocre people, and you could be swimming upstream in order to achieve your dreams or in order to move forward in the area you wish to move forward in. So My biggest recommendation is allow yourself to think without limits on what it is you're working toward in your life, what it is you're doing. And chances are good you'll make connections with the people or the resources that will help you to achieve those things on a much more rapid and a much easier basis.
Awesome. Well, I sure love this. I appreciate your time, and I'm personally very inspired by your story and your journey and where you've taken it and where you're planning to take it in the future as best as you know now.
Well, you know, thank you so much, and I remember when I was in my little apartment when I was first involved in that first year or two of internet marketing. I went through one of your DVD courses, and I went through it with Jody, and we actually went through it several times because the concepts and principles that you're teaching and busting loose from the business game and all of the rest of your work going back quite a ways that I've seen have been directly applicable to thinking about business, thinking about money, thinking about, you know, bringing all those pieces together so you can really live the kind of life you want to and achieve the kind of success you want to in the process. So I have to thank you for I'm glad we bumped into each other early on. It made a big, big difference.
Well, I appreciate that. Mutual Admiration Society here.
That's right.
Great. Well, thank you for your time, and we will bring this particular episode to a close.
Thank you.
Robert Scheinfeld here with another episode of Chats with Fascinating People. And as the title would suggest, I have another opportunity for you to either get to know for the first time or get to know better another fascinating person whose name is Lynn Robinson. Lynn Robinson is what I call, and there are many labels, but what I call an intuitive. And she writes about it. She speaks about it. She does private consultations, helping people to receive guidance and receive information about their journeys and such, sharing her gift. I don't remember exactly when we met, but we've known each other for many years and our paths have crossed. I've had numerous intuitive consultations with her when that was something that I was doing on a regular basis to get additional guidance for some of the craziness in my own life. So today what we're going to do is talk about intuition and talk about that as a concept and also the specific things that Lynn does and has discovered. So welcome to the Chats with Fascinating People, Lynn. It's a pleasure to be doing this with you.
I'm glad to be in the fascinating person category. Thank you.
So tell me, first of all, if somebody were to say, define intuition for me, mm-hmm. Psychic ability, whatever, why don't you start out with how you see that particular concept?
Well, the easiest definition is probably what the dictionary says, quick and ready insight. But I find that a little boring and a little dry. So I think of intuition as our inner compass. It's our maybe inner GPS that when we pay attention to it, it tends to point us in the right direction. So often when we get some clarity about where we want to go, as in what you would do when you're using a compass or a GPS, your intuition will start to say, either talk to this person or let go of that or try this new thing or here's an idea for you. And it comes to us in lots of different ways. There's really no one way that's the right way. It might come as a gut feeling. It might come as a different kind of physical sensation, perhaps an emotional reaction. It might come as a dream or an image or symbol. So it comes in a lot of different ways. But I find that it's a really wonderful inner wisdom that definitely points us in the right direction and has us moving towards more success and happiness in our lives when we pay attention to it.
So when we're looking at intuition, it's something that we feel and we experience ourselves in a variety of different ways. But when you play the role of, let's call it intuitive counselor,
yes,
and you're getting information about somebody else,
mm-hmm.
where do you feel you're getting the information from?
Yeah, good question. I mean, people usually call me when they're in the midst of change and transition and trying to figure out next steps or getting insight into people that they're in business or personal partnerships with. And, you know, I get it the same way that I just mentioned. I get images, feelings, words, pictures. I usually get it when I'm asking a question like, you know, what's can I say to be helpful to Bob, or what's going on with his business partner, or what can I say that would be helpful, sort of the generic question. And my belief is that information is readily available to all of us. I mean, while I may have practiced it and studied it a lot and maybe have a greater gift than others, I do feel that we're all hardwired for this intelligence. And There's a lot of theories about how it comes. Sometimes, you know, one theory that maybe Malcolm Gladwell in the book Blink has popularized is it comes through knowing something on a very conscious level, and you're really tapping into a background of knowledge on a subconscious level. You know, I think that's probably true, and the one that I prefer is I feel that it's divine consciousness. It's you're tapping into a spiritual information system that's there, that is really around us and runs through us, that is helpful to guide us in our lives. So that's really what I feel like I tap into. And the way I best described it is it's not unlike a radio frequency, that when you kind of get on the frequency of what you're trying to get information about, it will start to come in clearly and the information will start flowing. And I find the best way to kind of prime the information is to really ask questions. So I bet a lot of the people on the call are probably small business owners or entrepreneurs in some way. And I like asking questions like, you know, what's the best way for me to grow my business, or what's the next best step, or how could I be more open or attracting of prosperity right now, or what do I need to know about this person I'm hiring? And the information doesn't always come through right away. It would be great to say, Bob, here's the answer to your question. But, you know, more often than not, intuition comes when you least expect it, when you're walking your dog, when you wake up in the morning, when you're driving to work. I think there's a lot of tools and techniques we can use to kind of prime the pumps a bit, but that's the best way that I find that the information comes in.
What do you feel about the whole concept of privacy along these lines? Do you think that the information is just there and really anybody, if they're able to turn on their radio receiver or whatever, can pick up anything about anybody, or do you think there's some sort of a privacy system, some sort of a manager from behind the scenes that determines who's able to access what?
That's a good question. You know, nobody's ever asked me that before. My intention when I tune into people is to be able to be helpful. And so I do find that, you know, that feels like the information that I'm getting to help the person that I'm speaking to understand another person or see the world from his point of view or her point of view. So my intention always is to kind of go into it in a very open-hearted way, to find ways that there's a mediation, a win-win solution, to be able to see things from other people's perspective. And there are times where I feel like I can't get the information. And so it's very possible that what you're suggesting is operating behind the scenes there, that someone just says, nope, you're not getting that information, or blocking it in some other way. That doesn't happen very often, but I definitely can think of several times when it has, and it's been a little puzzling. It's almost what it felt like was a curtain came down, and it's like I wasn't able to get beyond that curtain to get the information. So not sure what's at work there, but I've sure had the experience of it happening.
Do you have any tips or suggestions for people who are aware that they do receive information like this, but they have difficulty trusting it?
I tell people to take small steps to act on the information. I think the reason that many people are scared of their intuition is it often encourages them to do something out of their comfort zone. And frankly, I'm real in favor of that. I mean, I think most of us didn't get to be successful entrepreneurs without taking some risks. And usually it's our intuition guiding us and nudging us and saying, you know, opening up some doors. But, you know, that said, there's big risks and there's small risks. So if your intuition is guiding you towards doing something and it just feels too scary and uncomfortable, how can you break it down into a smaller, manageable thing? I mean, for example, you've got a steady job in this economy. Maybe you're very grateful for that, but your intuition is saying, wow, I've got this great new idea, a service, a product, something that I'd love to put out there. I'd love to be an entrepreneur, but it feels way too scary to leave your job. So I mean, a way that if your intuition's guiding you towards leaving your job, but it feels scary, you might just find some ways to take some small steps towards that to honor your intuition, such as maybe it's talking to other entrepreneurs. Maybe if there's a support group you could join. Maybe you could arrange to have one day off a week. Maybe, you know, you could probably get the idea of where I'm going with that, but just trying to honor your intuition by taking a small step, because it often does lead you out of your comfort zone. But frankly, I just find that when I've really trusted it and taken action on the intuition, so many new wonderful things have opened up for me, and I do find that when I trust it, it definitely guides me towards feeling happier and feeling more centered and connected, and out of that, I feel a lot more success grows.
Now, if you imagine that somebody, as they're monitoring their own, I'll call it inner awareness, and there's all kinds of voices telling them to do things, not do things, go here, go there, don't do that, whatever it is. Do you have any tips for somebody being able to separate out what is truly what we would call intuition from just basic fears or noise mm-hmm. or insecurity or wherever else the voice might be coming from?
Yeah. One is just based on past experience, like when you've made a decision that worked out well for you or maybe didn't, you know, how did that voice sound to you? Usually people tell me that when it's the true voice of intuition, it's not being critical. It's not saying, you know, geez, Lynn, you're really a jerk. How come you're not acting on this? This is, you know, this is the next best thing. Hey, you know, you must be just this or that. And that's not your intuition. If your intuition generally sounds very loving, it sounds very caring, it often does speak in a still, quiet inner voice. It doesn't tend to speak real loudly. And so those are the ones that I try to pay attention to. And, you know, I think all of us, if we've done any inner work at all, are usually overly familiar with the voice of the inner critic or the fault finder or whatever we want to call it. And that's not your intuition. So it's the part when you feel at peace, when you feel centered, where maybe it's leading you towards taking a bit of a risk and a stretch, but it might. The other thing about intuition is it often, I call them intuitive nudges. Usually that intuition will keep coming back to you, that this is what you're supposed to do. Try this, do that, this is it. But it tends to make you feel more at peace and calm despite the fact that it's challenging you to do something new and different. So that's really the voice to pay attention to or the feeling to pay attention to. And usually it will repeat itself. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I said usually it will repeat itself. So I find that if it's really a true voice of intuition, it will kind of communicate to me in a number of different ways. I might have a dream about it. These are what I call intuitive nudges. I might have a dream about it. I might overhear a conversation with somebody talking about this thing that I'm thinking about. I might get a peaceful feeling when I think about doing this thing. So those are all ways that the intuition speaks to me and I find speaks to a lot of other people.
So two of the keys are it's a persistent communication and it has a different kind of a sound and a feel than what I call noise.
Yeah. Right. Yep. Good way of summarizing it. Yes.
Now, what if somebody would say, hey, I believe in this and I know that a lot of people have had a lot of success, including, you know, gigantic success stories where the original idea or how to solve a problem or whatever came through intuition. I really believe in it. I just don't ever seem to get messages like that. I don't know how to kind of open the channel or turn on the radio receiver. What would you say for someone in that kind of a situation?
I would tell them to start paying attention to what interests them or excites them, because I think that's also a clue from your intuition. And generally people can discern that. I mean, if somebody's saying, oh, I really ought to rewrite my resume, or I really ought to go look for a job. You know, if it's coming up on that level of kind of boring, enervating, draining, that's your intuition saying those courses of action are probably not going to be the most profitable. But if you feel excited, enthusiastic, interested in something, that's your intuition saying take steps in that direction. In fact, the root of the word enthusiasm is from the Greek root, and theos, and it literally means God within or guidance within. So when you're following what you're enthusiastic about, that's your guidance within saying go in that direction. In fact, I have a technique that I find really helpful, either A, when I'm feeling very stuck, or B, when I'm overwhelmed, and I think a lot of us find ourselves in those situations, is I get up in the morning and I pray and meditate and center myself as best I can. And then I ask myself, what three things can I do today? And this is a little bit fill in the blank, to grow my business or attract more money or to feel more at peace, you know, fill in the blank with whatever your situation is. So what three things can I do today, I'll just use, to grow my business, that feel interesting or exciting? And then I just wait and see what happens in terms of what pops in my mind or what hunch I get or what I think about that I feel excited about. And, you know, it might be something very mundane. It might be, oh, I should go call Bob and have a cup of coffee with him. It might be something bigger. It might be, you know, I really want to rework on that side of my web page. You know, I think I want to make that more user-friendly. It might be, hey, I really want to sign up for that course. But if any of those feel like, or they don't have any, you know, juice to them, I don't do them. And so it's kind of what I call an intuitive business plan. I've been in business for 27 years pretty successfully, and I've never had a kind of one of those logical kind of left brain business plans. So that's my best advice when you're not, really don't know kind of how, if it's it's not coming to you in a booming voice or a still quiet inner voice, or it's not coming in a dream or any other way. It's just to pay attention to where your enthusiasms are and take steps in those directions. It's a great way to live life also.
Well, and the other thing, too, which is part of when I did, there were a lot of times in my life, because I would say that in my adult life and childhood, but that I was a very intuitive person. I also had a very active intellect, and I also had a lot of what I call neurotic stuff. And so there were times that I felt like I was getting a message, and I felt like it was an intuitive message. I didn't have enough confidence necessarily, like we talked about, to be able to take action on it. And so that's one of the reasons why I very often used intuitive counselors like you as I was building up my own confidence in what I was getting, as I was developing clarity on when it really is intuition. How does it sound differently? And so there were a lot of times that I had a kind of a hit, and then I would seek out somebody like you, and I would say, you know, I've been getting this really strong feeling to da-da-da-da, but I'm afraid of da-da-da-da, or I don't, whatever.
Yeah.
And so that's another way that it was very, very helpful for me.
Yeah, thanks, because I do think that that's probably very helpful to a lot of people. And honestly, when people have sessions with me, it's often not that I'm saying anything new and earth-shattering that you've never heard before. It's often what's most comforting to people that they say at the end of the session is, you know, you really just reaffirmed what I know I needed to do. And just having somebody else that doesn't know me, who's an objective outside observer, tuning into the situation and getting the same message is so helpful. And then they can kind of move forward with more confidence. So I do find that that's true. And, you know, often I'll get a lot of the same messages that other people are getting. So I think that is very comforting. And I even use intuitives, too, for the very same things, even though I do this for a living. You know, sometimes you get a little caught up in your own drama sometimes, and you're not sure if you're seeing it clearly. So yeah. I had that same experience as you.
So part of what you do every day that you would call your business is that you do private consultations. Let's talk a little bit about those in terms of, you know, length, or if there's any kind of structure to it, and then some of the other stuff that you do as part of your work, whether there's books, courses, live events, whatever other kinds of things that you offer to the world as part of your gift.
Yeah. Well, as I said, you know, I usually do personal individual consulting. A lot of people that call me are entrepreneurs or senior executives in companies, so it's somewhat a little more business-oriented, but I still do a lot of personal sessions. And people come when they're in the midst of change and transition, trying to figure out next steps, and I use my intuition and hopefully help them use theirs to figure out what those next steps are, what the larger vision is, what might be standing in the way, how they can free that energy up so that they can more easily and quickly and accomplish what they want. And I usually do hour sessions and half-hour sessions. You know, people call me usually several times a year. It's not an ongoing thing for the most part, although sometimes people use me that way. I also do a lot of speaking on the topic of trust your gut and grow your business and companies, and I love working with entrepreneurs. That's one of my favorite groups. And I've written a whole bunch of books, the best known of which are Divine Intuition and Trust Your Gut and How the Power of Intuition Can Grow Your Business. So those are the two most popular books.
Well, and the other interesting thing about that as it relates to entrepreneurs, and this is something that I learned at a very young age from my grandfather and from some other very, very successful business people that I knew, is that if you pull back the curtain on pretty much any success story in business, it doesn't matter how big it is or how global it is or how many millions or hundreds of millions or billions is in the success story. And you really pull back the curtain, and the entrepreneur, just to call it that, is really honest. You find out that all over the place, at some of the most key moments, the decisions they made, where the ideas came from, that everybody, even if they seem to be the most logical, intellectual, analytical kind of person, that littered throughout their success story is evidence of intuition being the core of some of their most strategic and key and brilliant ideas or whatever. But most people don't think that's the case for business success, but it really is, isn't it?
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. And a lot of times when people aren't honest about it, they'll have the intuitive impression and then make it sound very logical and rational that they did years of study and research about it. But frankly, I think that we can't avoid our intuition any longer. I mean, I think that we've got some, you know, troubles in our economic market. We've got some troubles in the world. And intuition can provide us with fresh answers, with creative answers, with a new way of looking at things, a new way of looking at the world. And so I definitely see that the people who are very successful in business and otherwise are those who really do trust their intuition and do see it as wise guidance. And it's not to contradict that, yes, you need logic and rational ability and facts and figures, certainly, but there's that old other part of us that we don't tap into very much. And I think that when we ignore it, we ignore it at our peril. And when we pay attention, it's really a wonderful compass towards our successful happiness in life.
Now, in your books and when you do speaking, is there both inspiration and motivation to open this up and begin to trust it and use it in your day-to-day life, or do you do a lot of teaching in the books and in the speaking in terms of actual techniques to be doing things?
It's all of the above. I mean, really what I love to do as an intuitive is to really get a sense of what someone's big passion is and their purpose and mission and what they feel excited about and clear the way for them to be able to do exactly what they want to do. Because I think a lot of us have stuff in the way, you know, whether it's what you were calling your neurotic tendencies or you call it something else. You know, we doubt ourselves or we get fearful, we get scared. So I really try to zoom in what I'm getting intuitively to help people clear that stuff out so that they're really more of an open vessel vehicle for exactly the energy that they want to manifest in the world. So, but I also just am so practical. I mean, I know this is somewhat of an ooey-wooey topic, or can be. That's my scientific word for it. But I do believe that there's, I mean, my passion is to really help people in a very practical way to use this. So I love giving people lots of techniques and exercises to use to be able to unfold this for themselves. Because as I said earlier, we all have a different way of receiving it, and there really isn't one right way. It's just really what works for you.
So why don't you give out, it's going to be in a written document that people will download with this audio, but if they get separated, why don't you give out your website? And if somebody goes there to the website that we'll give out in a minute, will they see information on everything that you do, you know, all the books, any tapes or CDs or courses you may have, speaking engagements, how to do consultations? Is everything there?
It's all there. Yes, I've had my website for 15 years, so there's lots of pages on it. But yes, I do speaking on Trust Your Gut and Grow Your Business to a lot of groups, and Divine Intuition, which is a little bit more spiritually oriented, and all of the books. So the website is lynnrobinson.com, and it's LYNN, Robinson, ROBINSON, and my phone number is 1-800-925-4002. And if people prefer to email, it's lynn@lynnrobinson.com.
Now, is there any kind of like parting words? If you only remember one thing you heard today, remember this? Any of that kind of stuff that you'd like to leave people with?
I would say it's really the simplest one. It's to really follow what you're enthusiastic about, because that's really the heart of your intuition speaking to you. It's through what excites you, what you're passionate about, what interests you, and just to keep taking small steps towards that excitement. And that's your intuition guiding you to the life that you really want to have and what you love.
Awesome.
Well, thanks so much, Bob.
Thank
you. I'm
glad
to be one of your fascinating people today. Thank you so much.
I enjoyed it very much.
Great talking to you.
Thank you. This concludes the third segment of Chats with Fascinating People. Be sure to download the text document that goes with this that gives you all the information on how to contact the people that I had the chats with. Also, feel free to visit two of my websites, my main website, robertscheinfeld.com, robertscheinfeld.com, and pay specific attention to the resources tab at the top, but also feel free to explore the rest of the site. And I also invite you to check out my latest book, Busting Loose from the Business Game, that this series of chats was created as part of the launch for, at bustingloosefromthebusinessgame.com. Or you can also find your way to the book at Amazon or Barnes & Noble online, or from the online store tab at robertscheinfeld.com. Please continue on to the final segment in the Chats with Fascinating People series.